Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is another update on the situation with regards to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. This series of videos, I've been looking at the financial implications on the global economy of this crisis. And in today's video, I want to do a roundup and look at all of the issues that are affecting the global economy and to establish whether or not I think that this is going to lead to a global recession. So if you've been following the channel, you'll know that I've done a deep dive on a variety of different topics, and I want to bring all of that together today so we can see in one video exactly what the implications are. So we're going to be looking at the sanctions, we'll look at what's been going on with oil and natural gas and commodities and food, what the effect has been on individual companies and countries. We'll look at what's been happening with inflation and interest rates and debt. And then we'll have a specific look at China before I summarise exactly what I think is likely to happen over the next 3 to 6 months and whether or not we are heading for a global recession. So before we get into all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content, and also to subscribe if you haven't done so already. And don't forget, I always include chapters, so if there's a particular section you're not interested in, it's really easy to skip over that and move on to the next. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look in the description below where you'll find a link to both Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. So why would a war cause a recession? Well, the simple answer to that is sanctions. And before this war started, I don't think many people in the world realised what sanctions were. We'd heard the term thrown around a lot, and sanctions are often mentioned on the news against countries like Iran and Iraq and Venezuela, but I don't think anybody had a really good grasp of what sanctions actually meant in reality. But the sanctions that have been imposed against Russia recently have been high profile, and not only have they hurt Russia, they've also hurt the global economy, because Russia is an important supplier of a variety of different goods to the world. So the immediate sanctions that were brought in were financial sanctions. The Russian state was excluded from the financial markets, so it's now impossible for Russia to be able to raise any sovereign bonds or to borrow any money from the international markets. And that sanction was introduced to restrict the amount of capital that Russia can obtain in order to keep funding the war. But in addition to raising new money, Russia was also denied access to all of its overseas reserves. And over the last 10 years, Russia had built up over $600 billion in international reserves that are being held in a variety of banks all across the world. And the freezing of those assets was a big blow for Russia, because they'd been stockpiling all of these reserves in the event of something like this happening to ensure that they could keep making all of their international bond payments and making purchases outside of Russia using dollars and euros. All of the major banks that were identified as supporting Russia and the military conflict were also sanctioned. So those banks no longer had access to the international payment system called SWIFT. So that meant that those banks instantly became defunct overnight in terms of their international presence. But it wasn't just the banks that were sanctioned. A lot of large corporates from Russia, who were also seen as having relationship with the potential military conflict, such as steel companies and some of the energy companies, were also sanctioned. So that meant that they could no longer do trade internationally with all of the countries who are supporting the sanctions. And the final level of sanctions that were introduced were against individuals, key figures who were seen as supporting both Russia and President Putin, what's known as oligarchs, so immensely rich billionaires who'd made their money at the breakup of the Soviet Union, and a lot of whom are now living outside of Russia, and it was seen as a risk that they could keep sending money back or making cash available for financing things outside of the country. All of these sanctions were brought in very quickly after the 24th of February, which was the date when Russia first invaded Ukraine. And the impact of these sanctions has been massive, and this is the reason why we are potentially looking at a global recession, because they don't only affect Russia, they've also affected a lot of companies and countries and individuals all across the world. One of the biggest impacts of this crisis has been on the price of oil. If we look at this chart, it plots the price of oil over the last 5 years. And you can see that the average price has been somewhere in the region of $65 per barrel. You can see the steady rise in price that has been taking place since the 1st of December. Now, the oil market is quite a sophisticated market, and it is always looking ahead to see what's coming down the road and whether there are any issues with regards to potential supply. So from December onwards, there were a lot of reports in the press and a lot of concern about the fact that Russia had amassed 100,000 troops on the Ukraine border and was threatening to invade. So there was a growing nervousness that this crisis could happen. And the oil markets always take these risks into account. So you can see there was a steady rise through to February the 23rd, which was the day before the invasion started, and the price had got up to $87 per barrel. As soon as news of the invasion broke, the price took off, and we saw prices spike at $139 per barrel. At that stage, there was a lot of nervousness that all of the Western countries were going to sanction Russian oil and refuse to buy any further. And that would have led to an immediate shortage in the markets. And therefore, the price would have taken off. And there was a lot of commentary about prices getting up to $200 per barrel. What we've seen since then is that prices have been very volatile. They've come down and then they've shot back up again, depending on what's being reported in the press. The USA and the UK both confirmed that they will no longer be buying any oil from Russia, but the European Union, which is Russia's biggest market, is still silent on the matter. And the main reason for that is because of the dependence on Russian oil. If we have a look at this table, it shows the total amount of oil that each country is buying, and then it splits out the amount that's being purchased from Russia. So we can identify how important Russia is as a supplier to each of these countries. If we look at the figures on the left, which just include oil, you can see a lot of countries have a high percentage dependency. Lithuania sources 83% of all of its oil from Russia. It's 80% for Finland, 74% for Slovak Republic, 43% for Hungary, 34% for Estonia, 30% for Germany, 29% for Greece, 25% for Norway, 23% for Belgium and the Netherlands, 21% for Turkey and the Czech Republic. But even for the countries with smaller percentages, like France with 13% and the UK with 11%, the volume of oil is large. So France is buying 1.8 million barrels per day and the United Kingdom 1.6 million per day. And it's also interesting to look at the countries outside of Europe. So the USA was previously buying 7% of all of its oil requirements directly from Russia, which equated to 8.5 million barrels per day. The actual percentage in Mexico and Canada doesn't even register. It's showing us 0% on this chart. But when you look at the number of barrels, it's around a million barrels per day that both countries were buying from Russia. Japan are buying around 4 million barrels per day, Korea about 3.7 million, and Australia around a million barrels per day. So in total, Russia was supplying the global markets with around 21.5 million barrels every single day. And that really gives you perspective on the problem that we've got here, because oil is absolutely essential. Even though everybody would love to move to a renewable society where we have solar panels on the roof and geothermal heating and everybody drives electric cars, that is some time away. It's going to be another 10 or 20 years before the whole of the Western world gets to that situation. So in the short term, we have an absolute dependency on oil and fossil fuels. And switching the supply of 21.5 million barrels of oil per day is not simple. There are logistical issues with regards to that. Oil has to be transported either on ships or through pipelines, and you have to have supply contracts in place and work out how and when you're going to take delivery. So changing your oil supplier is not like changing your energy supplier. You can't just do it on the internet overnight and then it happens the next morning. This takes a lot of time and effort and money to arrange. So the immediate spike in prices that we saw was a reaction to the fact that we could have been facing shortages. If everybody had just immediately said, we no longer want Russian oil, that would have led to shortages, guaranteed, because it's impossible to be able to get the replacement supplies in place quick enough. As the market started to realize that that actually wasn't going to happen, prices have started to come back down. But the medium to long-term play here is that all of the countries in Europe have stipulated that they no longer want to be dependent on Russia. They are looking to change their suppliers. So over time, Russia will be excluded from the supply chain, and other countries will step into that gap. But the bottom line for the global economy is that prices have gone up above $100 per barrel and are likely to remain at that level for the foreseeable future. One of the reasons that Europe was buying its oil from Russia is that it was the most cost-effective way to get hold of it. Russia is one of the closest suppliers of oil in terms of proximity, but it's also set up a variety of pipelines that feed oil directly to a lot of different countries. So the infrastructure's in place, and now that that infrastructure is established, it keeps the cost down. Having to take tanker deliveries that need to be transported halfway across the world is going to be more expensive for all of those countries. So there's a financial implication to making a decision not to take this oil from Russia. And that financial implication feeds through into the global economy. If we are resetting oil prices from a long-term average of $65 to a new average of $100, then that means that prices have increased by around about 50%. And unfortunately, that price increase is going to feed through everywhere because oil is used mostly for transport. So anything that needs to be transported, it's going to cost more to get those goods to where they're going. So that will add more costs. But oil is also used in the production of a lot of goods and materials. The petrochemical industry is the basis for a lot of man-made materials. So all of those costs are going to go up. And then finally, electricity costs are going to go up. A lot of countries around the world use oil for the production of electricity. And oil is also used in a lot of derivative forms for heating and cooking by consumers. So the sanctions that have been brought in directly relating to oil will definitely have a negative impact on the global economy. Russia is the largest exporter of natural gas globally and is the biggest supplier to Europe. And a lot of European countries have gas-fired power stations, so they're using natural gas to produce electricity. Russia has laid a variety of pipelines all across Europe, and these pipelines feed natural gas in their gaseous state directly to a lot of these power stations. Most countries in Europe buy gas directly from Russia, and the countries with the biggest exposure are the Eastern European countries, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, and Turkey. If we look at this graph, it shows the price of Dutch natural gas over the last 5 years. And you can see that the price has been trading at around about 20 euros per megawatt hour. If we have a look at the graph for the last 12 months, we can see that prices have been increasing. And on February the 16th, the price was trading at around 60 euros. As news of the war broke, the price took off and at one stage was trading above 230 euros. Now the story here is exactly the same as oil. The reason that prices took off dramatically was that there was a concern that all of the countries were going to want to switch off their gas supplies and try to find gas from alternative sources. But locating alternative suppliers for gas is even more difficult than it is for oil. Because to transport gas over long distances, you have to liquefy it, which means cooling and pressurizing the gas, and then transporting it. And then at the other end, when you arrive with the liquefied natural gas, you then need a refinery to convert that liquid back into a gas safely and securely for it to be able to then be used in the power stations. In the same way as for oil, a lot of European countries have stated their medium-term goal of reducing their reliance on Russia and finding alternative suppliers, but that will take time. I recently talked about Italy, who've made some movements towards installing some floating natural gas refineries. So these are basically large ships that can convert the liquid back into gas form to be used for their power stations, but they cost around $300 million each. And they take around 12 to 18 months to establish. So it's going to take time and it's going to cost money. And liquefied natural gas is more expensive than gas in a pipeline directly from Russia. The reason everybody's buying Russian gas is because Russia has installed all these pipelines and it comes through and it flows constantly. So it's very easy to use and it's also cheap. Changing that supply to liquefied natural gas is going to be more expensive and take a long period of time to be able to set up. But going back to the impact on the global economy, the long-term average price of gas has been trading at around about 20 euros, We're now at a point where it's trading above 100 euros. So we're looking at a 5x increase over the last 12 months. And a lot of this gas is being used to create electricity. So that means that the input price of electricity has gone up around 5x for a lot of these countries. Now, that can't be passed on to the consumer. You can't have a 5x increase in your electricity costs because that is going to kill both industry that uses electricity and also all of the consumers won't be able to afford to pay their bills. So we've got a real problem here. Either countries step in and provide subsidies or put price caps in place to enable everybody to survive, or if they just leave it to a free market economy, we are going to see chaos because we will see massive increases in energy costs for consumers. Now, we're already hearing those stories in a lot of countries around the world that energy bills have gone up dramatically, but they haven't gone up 5x. They're going up 20, 30, 50% at the moment. But over the course of the next 3 to 6 to 9 months, all of these price increases will have to be fed through. Somebody is going to have to pay the extra amount for this gas. And it's either going to be absorbed by governments or just passed through into society. And if it's the latter, then that is going to have a massive impact on the global economy because people have less disposable income and therefore they'll spend less. And we'll see falling levels of GDP and we will be heading very much for a major recession at that point. Unfortunately, the story with regards to food prices is similar to what we've just talked about for oil and natural gas. Russia and Ukraine are important suppliers of a variety of different food substances. The two countries account for around about 40% of all of the wheat exports, and Ukraine is also a big exporter of corn and sunflower oil. If we have a look at this chart, it shows the average price of wheat over the last 5 years, and you can see that prior to the pandemic, the price of 100 bushels of wheat was around $500. After the invasion was announced, the price took off and was trading above $1,200 and has now settled at around about $1,000. So that represents a doubling of the long-term price. And the problem that we've got with wheat is that it's used all across the world to make flour, and flour is the basic ingredient to make bread and pasta and noodles. So we've seen a big increase in the price, but one of the biggest concerns about this conflict is that we will have massive shortages. So there are a number of countries that are dependent upon the supply of wheat directly from Russia and Ukraine. I recently covered Egypt in one of my videos, and the amount of bread that's consumed per capita in Egypt is 3x the global average. Everybody in Egypt is dependent upon bread, and therefore they need flour to make that bread. The loss of the exports from Russia and Ukraine is having a massive impact in Egypt. It's driven up the prices, and the government has had to step in and set new subsidy levels for bread, which means that they will now have to absorb that cost, and Egypt is now in discussions with the IMF about a bailout. So you can see in that example the direct linkage from this war to major problems in a country that is nowhere near Ukraine. We've got a population that's got a shortage of food. They've got a crisis in terms of the cost of food, and they've got a problem with regards to how they're going to find an alternative supplier in time to be able to get this flour into the country. And one of the big problems we've got with regards to food is that the developed countries of the world can afford higher prices. So we're seeing prices go up in all different food categories. So wheat and corn and sunflower oil that I mentioned have all gone up, but it's feeding through into other different areas because if you can't find wheat, then you need to find alternative ways of making food. So that drives up the price of other basic commodity food items. So if these prices go up 10 or 20 or 30%, the Western world can accommodate that. We can afford to pay an extra 10 or 20% for basic items. In the developing and emerging economies, they simply can't afford to do that. There are a lot of people living below the poverty line all across the world, and they can't afford 1% more, never mind 10 or 20 or 30% more. So we're looking at a very serious crisis here. It's not just an economic crisis. It's not just about a recession and people having to cut back and pay higher taxes and all of those issues. This is potentially going to lead to world famine. But just finishing off on the financial aspects, this war is driving up the price of basic commodity items in food, and that's feeding through into all parts of the food industry, and therefore will mean higher prices on the shelves, and therefore means less disposable income and the higher risk of a recession. Russia is a major supplier of a variety of minerals and commodity items that are used in a whole host of different manufacturing processes and industries. These commodities include palladium, platinum, vanadium, nickel, aluminium, cobalt, titanium, gold, and silver. Since the war started, we have seen volatile price movements in all of those commodities, and one of the concerns is not simply about price, it's also about availability, because a lot of these specialist metals are used in a lot of everyday items, and if they're no longer available, then it can cause problems and delays in the manufacturing process. So as an example, palladium and platinum are both used in catalytic converters for diesel and gasoline vehicles. So without those two metals, it means you can't produce your catalytic converter, which means you can't produce the vehicle. So potentially losing your supply could mean that you have to shut down your entire production and that your company becomes at risk. So when you have a situation like this, prices start to skyrocket, and that is going to feed through into the economy. So once again, we've got the double whammy of increased prices and reduced availability. But unlike oil and natural gas and food, some of these items are not easy to find alternative supplies for. Russia is a large country, it's got lots of natural resources, and it's got a highly developed mining industry. So it's very difficult to replicate that in a short space of time somewhere else in the world. So once again here, the outcome of this war is higher prices for commodity items, which will feed through into higher prices for finished goods, which is going to mean less disposable income and the higher risk of a recession. Following the official sanctions that were brought in by a lot of governments, a lot of companies made official statements confirming that they no longer wanted to do any business in Russia, they no longer wanted to do any business with Russian companies, and that they were going to close down their operations and investment. The highest profile of all of these were the oil companies, who had been working in Russia for the last 20 or 30 years and have invested billions. BP had reportedly invested $25 billion and had up to 30% of all of its oil reserves located in Russia. So they will now be writing off all of that investment and all of the future profits that they would have benefited from the development and sale of that oil. But it's not just the oil companies that are feeling the pain here. This goes through every single section of society. So we've seen retailers that have shops in Russia closing down those operations. We've seen suppliers of clothing and other consumer goods cutting all of their exports off. We've seen Facebook and Instagram and Google close down their operations. So this will have a direct impact on all of those companies' results and profits and cash flows this year and for future years. Russia has a population of 145 million people, making it the ninth largest country in the world, but the third largest country in terms of the developed world after the USA and China. So it's an important market for a lot of companies. If you want to be a multinational business, then you want to have operations and sales and profits in all of the large economies. So Russia has been a target market for a lot of businesses over the last 10 years or so. So there's been a lot of investment being made, not just directly into Russia, but in terms of your Russian sales force and developing product to be sold in Russia. So there's a lot of investment that's going to be wasted here, but there's also a lot of foregone profit. So a lot of these companies were working on their development plans for Russia, and all of that has been wiped out overnight. And when you have a situation like this where you lose a market instantly, it's going to hit you because you've still got all of your costs in place. You've still got all your people, you've got your product, your brands, all your marketing strategies. Everything's ready to go. And all of it is now a complete waste of money. So the loss of business is the issue for the global economy here. And we will see a lot of businesses making less profit and less cash in 2022 and beyond because of this crisis. Inflation was already a problem before Russia invaded Ukraine. The hangover of the COVID-19 pandemic was that a lot of countries around the world were seeing rising prices. We had a lot of lockdowns in 2020, and in 2021, as the world economy started to reopen, everybody wanted to get back to life as normal. So we saw a huge surge in demand for everything. People had put their lives on hold for a long period of time and wanted to make up for lost ground. So everybody went out and started spending money and enjoying themselves, and therefore we saw a huge increase in demand. Now, the problem that we had was that a lot of companies had run down their stocks and they'd also closed their operations. So it took some time to get back towards full capacity and to be able to produce enough things to meet the demand. So when you have a situation where demand exceeds supply, it always drives up prices. And that's what we've seen over the last 12 months or so. And in a lot of countries around the world, we've currently got the highest levels of inflation that we've seen for 20 or 30 or 40 years. So this was already a major problem. But what's happened in Ukraine has exacerbated that problem. We have made it much worse because the price of a lot of goods and materials have gone up significantly for all of the reasons we've just discussed. Oil, gas, food, and all of the commodity metals all feed through into higher prices and therefore are going to push inflation even higher. And the problem we've got is that we haven't really seen the impact of the war feeding through onto the prices on shelves yet. This is all coming over the next 3 to 6 months. So that means that we are nowhere near the top of the inflation charts right now. We are going to see prices continuing to rise for at least the next 6 months. The traditional way of solving high inflation is to increase interest rates. I've talked about it a lot on this channel, but the basic logic is that if you increase interest rates, firstly, it encourages people to save more because interest rates are higher and you can earn interest on your money in the bank. But more importantly, it increases the cost of debt. And most people across the developed world have debt in some form or other, either a mortgage or some other loans. And if you increase the cost of debt, it will increase the cost of new loans for anybody taking out a new mortgage or a new car loan, for example. And if you've got a floating or a tracker mortgage, then it will instantly increase the cost of that debt. So raising interest rates means that it costs people more money, they have less disposable income, and therefore they will spend less, and that calms down demand. And as demand falls, then that should bring prices back down. That is the basic logic of why interest rate increases solve inflation. But the problem that we've got right now is that inflation isn't being driven by individual country demand. It's being driven by macro issues on a global scale. Increasing interest rates will not reduce the price of oil or natural gas or any of the other things that I've discussed in this video, because the reason that those prices are rising is because there's a concern over global supply levels. So there's a very real chance that we could end up with very high rates of inflation and very high rates of interest at the same time that aren't solving the inflation problem. And all that will do is reduce the amount of spending and growth in the economy, which could lead to companies making less profit or potentially making losses, which means that they could then start laying people off and making them redundant, which will mean there's even less money in the economy and we get a downward spiral. So all of this that's going on right now definitely increases the chances of a global recession. One of the other consequences of the global pandemic is that debt levels are now at their highest point that they have been ever. The majority of countries around the world introduced a variety of support schemes to enable companies to pay their workers while they were unable to work and to provide more benefits and support to society. Now, all of those schemes cost a huge amount of money, and governments around the world are now sitting with record debt levels. The amount of sovereign debt has never been higher. It's estimated to be somewhere in the region of $300 trillion right now. But in addition to that sovereign debt, we've also got record levels of company debt because companies had to take on more debt to survive through that whole period. If you're not trading, you're not making any cash, you're not got any profit, you needed some way to be able to pay the bills. And it's the same story for private individuals. The lockdowns were very difficult for a lot of people. They had to borrow money, and also a lot of people decided to move house, and house prices took off and went crazy, and people found that they could borrow large amounts of money for very low rates of interest, and therefore they took on a huge amount of debt. So the whole world is now highly leveraged, and that is a very dangerous situation when we're going into a period where we've got record levels of inflation and potentially large increases in interest rates coming, because those interest rates will increase the cost of that debt for a lot of borrowers and therefore increases the risk that some of those borrowers will default. And when we have payment defaults, that means that we could have bankruptcies and insolvency, and that is a sign of a recession. So the high levels of debt that we've got right now are another reason that we've got increased risks of a global recession. I wanted to touch on China briefly in this video because if you follow the channel, you'll know that I've posted a lot of videos about Evergrande and the property developers and the whole Chinese economy. And prior to this war, that was the biggest concern for the global economy. We were worried that when all of these Chinese property developers default on their international debt obligations, that would have a domino effect. We would see the loss of hundreds of billions of dollars of debt feed through into all levels of society and potentially cause a global recession. Now, I haven't posted any videos on Evergrande and China recently, but it doesn't mean that the problem has gone away. In fact, what's happening right now is going to make the situation worse because the global prices that I've talked about for all of these different commodities will be impacting China as well. China still has its trading relationship with Russia, so that's been relatively unaffected, but it will be affected by the increased price of all of the other imports it's making from around the globe. Now, so far, China has remained relatively neutral in terms of its stance on the sanctions. It hasn't imposed any sanctions directly itself, but neither has it come out and supported Russia. But there is a risk that if this conflict goes on for much longer, that China may be drawn in, and if it decides to start supporting Russia, then that would mean that sanctions would then be imposed against China as well. And that would have a really big impact on the global economy because a lot of goods are sourced directly from China. So there's a lot of nervousness in the world right now that if China does suddenly decide that it wants to put its head above the parapet and start supporting Russia, that that could have really devastating impact. But even if it doesn't, there is a high likelihood that China is heading towards its own recession, and that will also have a knock-on impact to the global economy. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I think it's clearly evident that the direct impact of this war on the global economy is bad news. There is no upside from what's happening right now. All of the issues that I've talked about in this video are about higher costs. We've got higher costs of oil and natural gas and food and commodity minerals and higher inflation and higher interest rates. So increasing the price of everything rapidly means that everybody will have less disposable income this year. And that's likely to lead to a reduction in spending at the same time as we see continuing inflation. So that's bad news in itself, but alongside higher prices, we are now running a real risk of global shortages of a variety of items. Depending on what happens with sanctions and how far they're taken, and whether more countries decide that they want to blacklist Russia, we could see genuine shortages of oil, natural gas, food, and a lot of different manufactured products. A number of countries around the world have already stated that they've got problems sourcing enough food for their population, and we're seeing blackouts occurring in places like Turkey and Sri Lanka, and it's likely that those blackouts will start spreading to other emerging and developing nations. But it's not just those guys who are at risk. There's a possibility that some of the developed countries could have blackouts. One issue that I haven't covered in this video yet is the risk that Russia suddenly decides to retaliate against all of the sanctions by switching off the supply of natural gas to Europe. If Russia took that step tomorrow, we would see blackouts in Germany and Italy and Turkey and Poland and a whole host of other countries who are fully dependent on that natural gas for producing electricity. Now, obviously, that doesn't make economic sense, but President Putin recently came out and made a demand that all energy costs for gas had to be paid for in Russian rubles. Now, none of those countries actually have any access to Russian rubles right now because the banks who have the rubles have all been sanctioned. So this is a way of President Putin goading all of these countries to say, okay, you've put the sanction in place to say you can't deal with these banks. These are the guys who've got the rubles. Pay me in rubles or I switch your gas off. So everybody's now got a tough choice of either calling his bluff and not paying him rubles and seeing whether or not he switches the gas off, or they have to break their own sanctions, go to the banks that are sanctioned and ask them to do some trades to get the currency to be able to make the payments. So the fact that we're in this situation means that there is an absolute possibility that that gas supply could be switched off. It would be an insane decision to make from Russia's point of view because they're receiving something like 880 million euros per day in energy payments. But this war is a very bad decision from a financial perspective anyway. So it might be that Russia decides that they want to flex their muscles. They want to prove how important they are to the European economy. And maybe they will switch off the gas supplies for 24 or 48 hours just to make that point. And if they do that, we will see instant blackouts in a lot of Europe. And if that happens, there'll be a lot of social unrest. A lot of people will be unhappy if they don't have electricity. So the impact of this war is far-reaching. Yes, it's having a massive financial impact and is probably going to lead to a global recession. The likelihood of a global recession occurring is much higher now than it was before Russia invaded Ukraine. But the risks here are not just financial. We are potentially looking at disruption to global world order and potentially the risk of famine occurring in a lot of countries around the world. So as I said, there isn't really any good news. I would like to tell you some great news, something uplifting, something quite heartwarming about what's going on right now. But unfortunately, the situation doesn't really merit that. This is a bad news situation, and all I'm doing is really trying to fill in the blanks as to why it's bad news, to give you more perspective on what's going on, and to give you a better understanding as to what the implications are for you and your life. Further to my recent postings, I wanted to just provide you with a very quick update on the Joe Blogs 2 project. As you'll know, this is an experiment whereby I would like to set up a channel that offers the opportunity to post videos from a variety of you guys. I'm very keen for you to start your YouTube journey. I started mine about 18 months ago. It took me some time to find exactly what it was that I wanted to do and how to do it. So I know it's a difficult journey and it's challenging and it's intimidating and it's very difficult to put yourself in front of the camera. But I want to give you the opportunity to be able to try things out and see whether or not you feel comfortable and if it's working, if anybody's going to watch it. And the best way of doing that is to have a channel whereby you can earn some money from your video. So what I'm trying to do is set up a second channel, a sister channel. I've called it Joe Blogs 2. That's just the working title at the moment. I will change that at some point in the future. And if I can get that channel monetized, it means that any videos that I post onto that channel will be earning money immediately. And I will share that income with you. But in order to get there, I need to get 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 hours of watch time. Now, I've used an old channel that I started about 18 months ago, which was predominantly focused on demonstration and review videos for products. So if you go to my homepage, you will see that Joe Blogs 2 is promoted there. You'll see a big black button with those words on it. And there's a subscribe button alongside that. If you could subscribe, that would be great. But in order to get the 4,000 hours of viewing time, it would also be great if you could watch a video or two. The easiest way to do this is to go onto the Joe Blogs 2 channel, go onto the playlist. And if you press play on the playlist, it will play through all of the videos. So maybe you've got an errand to run, or you're popping out to the shops, or you're about to put the kids in the bath or something like that. Then maybe you could just press play on that playlist, let it run through 4 or 5 videos, and then when you come back, you can switch it off. But that would really help me because it will get that viewing time up, and then it means that the channel becomes eligible for monetization. What happens after that point is that I would then have to apply for the channel to be monetized, and it takes another 3 or 4 weeks for that to happen. So if you've got the time and you can help out, that would be amazing because I'm really interested to see whether or not we can get this experiment to work and whether or not there is a future YouTube superstar out there watching this video right now who's thinking, I may very well just have a go at this. So thanks for hearing me out on the experiment and thanks for watching this video. If you've liked what you've seen today, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.